Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ihr hört Insert. Moin, ich bin der Manu und noch bin ich alleine hier vor dem Mikrofon. Das wird sich gleich ändern, auch die Sprache wird sich ändern. Ich habe nämlich ein Interview auf Englisch geführt mit dem Lead-Designer Rich Edwards und dem Producer Ash Tregay von Rebellion. Und die machen gerade und die werkeln gerade an dem Spiel Evil Genius 2. Auf dieses Spiel freue ich mich ungelogen seit 17 Jahren. Direkt als der erste Teil rauskam, wurde im selben Jahr noch der zweite Teil angekündigt, die Fortsetzung, und Evil Genius ist grandios. Fand ich damals zumindest sehr super. Ich weiß nicht, ob es die Zeit bis heute gehalten hätte. Ich habe schon lange nicht mehr gespielt. Es ist quasi Dungeon Keeper, aber im Setting eines, naja, einer James-Bond-Persiflage im Stile von No One Lives Forever, oder ihr kennt es aus dem Kino natürlich auch von
Oh, Behave.
Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Austin Powers. Genau in diesem Humor, genau in diesem Setting baut man als Bösewicht seinen Layer, seinen Dungeon auf. Und dann kommen die Guten, die Agenten, die Geheimagenten und tappen in die Falle. Jetzt gibt es endlich einen zweiten Teil, beziehungsweise kommt der bald, Ende März soll der erscheinen. Ich habe schon ein bisschen in die Preview reinschauen können, habe schon so ein, zwei Stündchen gespielt und freue mich sehr drauf. Und die deutsche PR hat mich angerufen und hat gefragt, ob ich nicht die Chance ergreifen will, im Podcast mit Rich und Ash zu sprechen. Wie gesagt, Lead Designer und Producer, und habe ihnen ein paar Fragen gestellt. Und ich habe sie gefragt, wie es ist, als Rebellion an diesem Spiel zu arbeiten, denn Rebellion ist eigentlich so gar nicht bekannt für ihre Aufbauspiele. Und das erfahrt ihr jetzt in diesem Interview auf Englisch. Viel Spaß damit.
Hello, my name is Ash Tregay. I'm the producer for Evil Genius 2.
And I'm Rich Edwards. I'm the lead designer.
Hi guys, nice to meet you, and I'm really looking forward to your game. Can you explain a little bit what is Evil Genius 2 about? Because the first part is so long ago that I bet a lot of listeners don't even remember this beautiful game.
That's right, yeah. So the original Evil Genius 2 was from way back in 2004, made by Lexus Studios. So Evil Genius 2 is a direct sequel to that game. It's a satirical spy-fi styled layer building game in which you take on the role of a criminal mastermind, building kind of the evil layer of your dreams inside a hollowed out remote island, filling that layer with evil minions and henchmen and all kinds of wonderful gadgets and traps, and then sending those minions out across the world to bring back the gold and raw materials you need to build and perfect a doomsday device and take over the world.
That sounds like a job right made for me. How did you guys come up with making a sequel? I remember I played the original in 2004, and I remember that the sequel was even announced in the same year, and it was then canceled. Why did it take like almost 17 years now to make another sequel for this
That's
game, Richard?
Great question. So I think it's a game that we've wanted to make at Rebellion since we kind of acquired the IP, and it's certainly one that fans have been asking for some time. And we kind of had reached this point where we had like an alignment of the stars, where we had the right time and the right team and the right level of interest to make it. So some people from the team have been specifically recruited to make this game. Rich, for one, was brought on specifically because he's a massive fan of the original game and really, really knows his stuff in strategy management games. And also, we've seen a resurgence in recent years of the strategy management genre. Titles like Two Point Hospital, Surviving Mars, Jurassic World Evolution, all these things show there's this resurgence and a really strong, passionate audience for these games. And it was the right time.
Mm. Rich, what fascinates you about this genre and this game in particular?
So growing up, I was taken to see a lot of the Bond films. They all sort of came back into the cinema when I was growing up. So there was always this sort of interest in the raw sort of thematics of that. And then the games that I was allowed to play when I was a child, things like SimCity, had a very sort of obvious management aspect to them. So those were the ones that I was naturally sort of gravitating towards. They were the ones I could get my hands on. And back in 2004, when Evil Genius came out, it was like a meeting of the stars. You know, it was these two genres that I had a deep love for just coming together. Mm. And this was a game that I just sunk so very many hours into, to the point where it's one of the reasons I got into the games industry. I was attempting to build my own version of this so very many years ago. And yeah, being able to join Rebellion and help them produce the actual Evil Genius 2 sequel is a dream come true.
Why did Rebellion buy this license in the first place? Can you guys say something about that? Because it's not like the typical genre that Rebellion is known for.
I think that's more of a question for the business development guys than us. What I can say is that we're delighted they did, because it gave us this opportunity. I think after the phenomenal success of the Sniper Elite series, there was an appetite among some people in Rebellion to do something a bit different and break away into a new genre and try something else. And so having this there and that enthusiasm already within Rebellion for that intellectual property and making sure that we could retain what was so unique and so special about the original game, but also put our own stamp on it, just appealed to a lot of us.
Hmm. I can imagine that it's quite a different scale and quite a different approach to make a management game in compared to a first-person shooter or a story-based game.
Oh, absolutely. Hugely different. I think I'll let Rich talk more about this, but I think one of the advantages of having our own in-house engine, the Azure Engine, means that we're able to go to our tech team and say, hey, cool, we need to make something completely different to what this engine has usually been used to make. Here's a bunch of stuff we'd like to do. And they've really been helpful in facilitating that. As far as the design goes, I will hand over to Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is obviously a very different beast, designing for something like Snipe to designing for this. For starters, we tend to put a lot more emphasis on player creativity. We want, at the end of the game, we want to leave you with something that you can look at and say, this was mine and this was how I approached conquering the world, and I have this there to show for it. So one of the guiding principles that we've had is, although we want to make sure we're giving you a challenge, although we want to make sure that you're always sort of pushing up against something that is challenging you, you've got a huge number of options available to you, and you can build your way. It's interesting, though, that you bring up designing for something with a narrative, because that's one of the unique things, I think, about Evil Genius, is we've lent into that theme, into that styling so heavily, that we've actually got a unique campaign in there for each Evil Genius that the player is able to select and play, which will guide you through, you know, the early days of their villainy right the way up to the day they decide that they are actually finally ready and able to unleash a doomsday device on the world.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think the one of the key differences with the Evil Genius franchise in general is that, unlike something like Two Point Hospital, where you're building and then running a successful hospital which can go on indefinitely, if you're trying to conquer the world, that does have a very definite endpoint, right? Either you succeed and the world is at your knees, or you've died in the process. So we needed to make sure that we were building a game around that central premise and building those four unique narrative campaigns to help the player experience that in a variety of ways.
Mm. Yeah, but I think that's like one of the cool aspects of this genre, that you have a lot of freedom, but still have a very specific goal. Like also with Dungeon Keeper or games like that, that you know you can succeed and you can manage this. And as you mentioned, the word domination is even in the title now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, as you say, you can succeed, but if you want that more kind of relaxed experience, the genre also provides the playground for you to do that as well. And we're certainly very conscious of that. That's why we're shipping the sandbox mode on day one as well, so that if players do want that kind of more laid back experience, where actually I'll get to ruling the world or dominating the world later on, for now I just want to build a really cool lair, then you can jump it straight into sandbox mode and do exactly that.
How did you approach the design concept that you have a genre that is like, sorry to say, but quite dead for a while now, and you still have to manage to make it feel modern and feel fresh, but still have to approach the old school players like me, who want to have a game that feels like the old games. Isn't that like the most difficult part?
It's certainly one of the major challenges, but I think, as we touched on earlier, there has been a resurgence in the genre in recent years. Things like Two Point Hospital have definitely sort of helped us sort of guide our decision making, and we can see that the fans are absolutely out there. They absolutely want to sort of sink their teeth into this kind of game again. So one of the things that has been guiding us is, obviously, we've been taking inspiration from the original game, and we've been looking back at those sort of titans of the genre, but ultimately, the thing that has changed more recently is gaming has become sort of more accessible to a wider number of people. So whilst we're building in controls that allow you to micromanage and to really take control of your lair and examine every single minion you have available to us, one of the big important things is that it just works straight out of the box. So if you are building your lair, you can focus on the big picture. You can be a genius and focus on conquering the world, and you've got to face the sea of minions. But for people like us who want that hardcore experience where we can dive in and look at, you know, every single minion, that's also available to us in this game. Ultimately, you can play Evil Genius 2 at whichever level you want.
Yeah, like making it more approachable, but still having the depth in it.
Yeah.
What is like one of the features or one of your favorite features that hasn't been in the old games and is now like something more prominent in the second game?
So I would always go to the Doomsday device as this for my first and most important thing. So in Evil Genius 1, you build a Doomsday device and you finally fire it at the world and you take over. But ultimately, it was a one use thing. You spent the whole game building it and then you finally, you know, pressed that big red button and the world was yours. We've used our narrative focus to make sure that we put a bigger emphasis on that. So very early on during the game, you'll be given this huge device that is capable of unleashing a tremendous amount of power. But things don't go immediately according to plan, and you're going to be spending that campaign using that Doomsday device, building it up, making sure that you are able to conquer the world. By giving you that focus, we're putting a greater emphasis on that device, turning it into a core mechanic rather than just an ending cinematic.
I think I'd add on that and potentially surprise Rich with my choice here as well, I would point to the minion training and minion management systems as a really great exemplar of exactly what he was talking about earlier, where we want to make sure that if you want to play the evil genius who focuses solely on the big picture stuff and everything else just kind of works as you make those large strategic decisions, then you can absolutely do that in the game. You can focus on, well, cool, just maintain 25, 50, whatever guards in my lair, and I won't worry about the details. But for those players who wants to get into the nitty gritty and min max and micromanage, they can go into the minion manager and say, actually, hey, these guys have, or this particular individual minion has traits which make them particularly suited to these kinds of jobs. So I'm going to make sure that minion will only do this kind of jobs, and you do that for every single minion in the lair if you choose to do so. But if you want to take a step back and actually not worry so much about the min maxing, then you can still do that and everything just works.
How does the game handle the different play styles regarding to the evil geniuses? You have like I played a little preview, but I only saw Maximilian. How are the what can we expect from the variety?
Here's Maximilian. We tend to call him Max because we're very familiar with him, so he doesn't mind too much. So Max is the example of kind of the all-round evil genius. He is what Rich likes to call the gold standard evil genius, and he's very much the archetype that we're familiar from the genre and the source materials that we drew inspiration from. But the other evil geniuses in the game focus on more one particular aspect of the character is brought to the fore. So if you look at Red Ivan, if fans of the original game will recognize Red Ivan, he's now an evil genius in his own right rather than just a henchman. And as you might expect, he's got a very obvious focus on the brute force approach to world domination. He's focused on training up muscle minions, arming them with big weapons, and going out into the world and not being terribly subtle. Whereas at the other end of the scale, you've got Emma, who is an ex-spy master, very focused on deception and trying to obfuscate her activities from the world and focus more on the deception aspects. So it's about making sure and Zalika, of course, focuses on the science so she can blast through the tech tree and unlock a load of cool traps more rapidly. So it's about making sure that each of those geniuses has the tools available, but each one of them has their own specialism. You can, if you want, choose to play against that genius's specialism, but you're probably doing them a disservice.
But are they all unlocked from the beginning, or do you have
Absolutely,
to
yes.
finish the campaign with Max? No.
No, we unlock all geniuses and all islands from the start of the game. So if you want to jump straight in as Ivan or Zalika or Emma or Max, then you have the freedom to do so.
Mm-hmm. Rich, can you give us some example, like how does the game evolve in gameplay mechanics? Like at the beginning, I'm building and planning my lair, and what happens later in the game, and what can we expect from that?
So it's going to be very heavily focused about reacting to the threats that are sent into your lair. So my immediate example here is early on, you might have some investigators sneaking into your lair, and they're not too stealthy. You are going to be able to spot them fairly straight easily and rip their disguises off and deal with them. However, later on, you're going to find that the more you're dealing with agents, sort of by making sure that they cannot return to their HQ, you'll find that you are sort of inviting attention from the forces of justice, which might mean that they end up sending soldiers because so very many of their agents have disappeared on this island. There's clearly something suspicious going on. So at this point, we do have a sort of nice divergence. Depending on which genius you're playing or the kind of player that you are, you might want to tackle this in a number of different ways. For example, if you want to keep a low profile, you might invest more heavily in your cover operation, which is a casino right at the front of your island, where you can convince people that actually there is nothing suspicious going on here at all. Mm-hmm. It's just a very fancy casino. Alternatively, if you're playing somebody like Ivan, you're going to be equipping more weapons to your minions, are going to be shoring up those defenses and making sure that anybody who does show up is met with an absolutely overwhelming wall of force. Mm-hmm. As Ash mentioned, you can play hybrid. I've actually been playing it quite a lot recently with Ivan, attempting to do a more stealthy playthrough, which has led to some interesting and really cool sort of hybrid moments where a fire will absolutely run rampant through my lair. Everybody will get terrified of that. And then I'll end up needing to send people out to the world map just to make sure that the forces of justice don't fully come to investigate.
I imagine it helps a lot that the more like faster computers and faster CPUs help a lot, like with simulating stuff like that, so that it helps like creating generated moments in instead of like scripted moments in the earlier days.
Oh yeah, I mean, Evil Genius 2 is, in terms of scale, certainly a lot more complex. Mm. You know, we also have vertical floors in the lair, as we mentioned, so you can build up as well as across the lair. So you're now managing hundreds of minions across multiple floors in the lair, with agents trying to infiltrate, super agents popping up, bombs going off, all sorts of stuff all happening fairly organically. So it can be really interesting to load up save files as they come in and see what other people do with their lair, because it's got a very different layout and there's all kinds of quite different chaos going on depending on how they approach the game. Mm. But yes, those more powerful CPUs have been absolutely integral to delivering this experience.
It's always great to when something unexpected happens, even to the developers.
Yes. There's been more than one meeting where we've loaded the game up and found that the example that we're about to talk about has just been infiltrated by saboteurs. And we just end with chaos on the screen as we're like, hold on, we need to discuss this. Been a lot of fun.
The first game was very funny in its own way and like very unique. You mentioned the different influences. How did you approach it this time? Like, how do you write a funny video game? Is it hard?
It's very hard. It's very hard to the point where we sought a bunch of experts to help us out. So we've got quite a few writers for the game. Paul Kruger, Kate Hartfield, Rich Edwards, the man in the school right now, written a bunch of it as well. And making sure that characters feel unique and appropriately punny, I guess, mm-hmm. is a key aspect for us. And some of those talking heads moments, particularly now that we've got the voice acting in, I think I was watching one the other day with two characters that I'd never seen the full finished version before, and it did actually make me laugh out loud, which was quite gratifying considering how many reviews we did of all of those writing and those jokes, how tired they could have become.
And a lot gets transported by the graphics, like the use of like comic and tropes and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also nice to see these things just organically happen in there as well. A couple of weeks ago, when I was sort of trying to defend my lair, I had a moment where I'd asked some minions to take care of an investigator who'd broken into my lair. And I had a couple of traps scattered around. And when this investigator decided that, no, actually, he was going to fight back and attempt to finish his mission, his friend came running down the corridor, triggered a trap, slipped up, got knocked into a shark tank. And it was just this beautiful moment of an agent thinking he's about to do the right thing. He's the hero in his mind. He's got that theme music playing as he charges into battle. And then it all just ended with a whimper for him. And that was wonderful to see as a player.
Did you get feedback from the players that usually, like in my bubble, people always say, like, I always try to be the bad guy in games, like, for example, Mass Effect, and I always play the good guy. Is that something that was a problem for Evil Genius, or is like something that people say, I want to be a peaceful leader?
I think it's about providing people with the correct outlets so they don't feel guilty. We use the phrase guilt-free evil a lot within the development team. So there's a definite line where we're like, no, this is funny evil, that is not funny evil. Mm-hmm. And we make sure that we kind of walk that line appropriately throughout Evil Genius. There's a point where ultimately, yes, we're kind of glamorizing crime a bit here because that's the nature of the game, but we don't want people to feel bad about the actions they're taking. I think a key aspect of that actually has been down to the design of the forces of justice, who, you know, in any other game, they'd be the good guys, right? They're the guys with the smug smiles, punchable faces who are trying to prevent your rise to power, and making sure that they do come across as smug, full of themselves, do-gooders means that, hey, if some of those guys fall into a shark trap or get set on fire, or get shot, you're not going to feel too bad about it.
I want to see those meeting boards like, okay, guys, Shark Tank is funny. Ripping out limbs and having a lot of blood, not funny.
That's almost verbatim from the board, actually.
Yeah, but you have to find a fine line between like funny gore and gruesome, but make it still funny. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Is there some features that you guys were in love with that got ripped out of development? I like to ask that question, but can you talk about that? Is there something you miss out of the production now?
I'm not sure I'd say for me that there were specific features that we ended up removing that I'd miss, but there have been some character concepts that I'm very much hoping that we will revisit later down the line that didn't make it into the core game. In finding the right tone for Evil Genius 2, because Evil Genius 2, as much as it's kind of a pastiche of all of these inspirations, you know, Bond and the Avengers and all the rest of it, it is also its own universe. I mean, if you look at the original Evil Genius, there are elements of magic and the fantastical in there with some of the loot items and the characters and their abilities. And we've been keen to maintain that in Evil Genius 2 as well. But getting that balance right is certainly important to make sure that fans know that we're very, very cognizant and big fans ourselves of the original game. And so there were occasions during development where we'd have a pitch for a really cool character that just didn't quite get that balance right. There's a couple of those, in fact, where I'm just like, oh yeah, I want to go back and see if we can get these guys and girls into the game in some point.
Okay. Evil Genius 3, maybe.
maybe.
Rich, how about you?
Honestly, I would have to echo Ash's sentiment to start with. There has been a number of characters and things that we've felt just walked that line a little on the hard side. But ultimately, I think if we had infinite time, we would just be making the game bigger and better in a number of ways. I think a big one here is traps. The number of traps that we have sort of in the initial concepts versus the amount that, you know, you have the physical time to make is overwhelmingly, you know, in favor of, you know, we can come up with so many ideas, so many different things that we can combine, and we're just never going to have the time to create all of them.
And so I think that speaks to the kind of... Sorry, Rich. I think that speaks to the kind of richness of that source material as well, is that there are so many ideas that inevitably have to be left, at least for now, on the cutting room floor to make sure that we actually ever get this thing out into the hands of the players we're making it for. But there's certainly a lot of rich inspiration left for us to draw upon.
Cool. The game is out coming very soon, I think end of March, right?
Yeah. That's right, 30th of March on Steam, available to pre-order when this podcast goes out, I think.
Yeah, put it on your wish list and take a look at the trailer. Thank you guys for your time. It was lovely to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to the game, to playing it finally after 17 years. And I wish you best of luck.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. This has been fun.
Yeah, the world's most powerful subterranean drill.
Does that make you horny?
So, das war die Folge für heute mit unserem Interview zu Evil Genius 2. Kommt am 30. März und wir werden natürlich eine Folge dazu machen. Ich werde mir das Spiel auf jeden Fall anschauen. Falls ihr noch ein bisschen unsicher seid, dann wartet auf unseren Podcast. Den werden wir definitiv hier haben, relativ zeitnah. Ich hoffe, dass ich schon ein bisschen vorher spielen kann. Und denkt dran, wenn euch gefällt, was wir hier machen, dann unterstützt uns doch bitte auf patreon.com/insertmoin oder steadyhaku.com/insertmoin. Wir sind komplett werbefrei und finanzieren uns lediglich und komplett alleine von unseren Hörern und Hörerinnen. Dann erhaltet ihr für 5 Euro im Monat, könnt ihr euch ein Abo klicken und erhaltet Montag, Mittwoch, Freitag und Sonntag jeweils eine neue Folge. Vielen lieben Dank an alle, die uns da schon unterstützen. Wir hören uns am Freitag wieder. Macht's gut.